Okay. Parshas Vayeshev. Tavshin Ayin Beis. So, to remind ourselves where we're at, let's just remember what we talked about last week and then build on it further by comparing and contrasting the highlights and low points, really, in Yosef and Yehuda's life. Because Yosef is the Iker Tolda of Yaakov and Rachel. Essential, right? It says in the Chazal tell us, the only reason he went to Lavan and worked all those years for Lavan was for Rachel. And Yosef's the Bechor from Rachel. And of course, Yehuda rises to glory. He is the leader of the children of Leah. So we spoke about Rachel and Leah and what that means in a much bigger sense, right? So let's just remember the framework, what we set up last time. We set up the idea that if Yaakov represents Torah, don't forget Yaakov is the father of all the Shvatim. Yaakov represents the third strand that binds together the previous two strands. We've spoken about what Avraham and Chesed is all about, what Yitzchak and Gevor is all about, and it's Yaakov, obviously, that holds them together and ensures that Torah can be acquired and that the inborn weaknesses, as we spoke about in the past, expressed through the concepts of Yishmael and Esav, are disentangled and Torah is established. However, Torah is acquired two different ways. One, we said, is what is called Isarusa de la Ela, right? And one is called Isarusa de la Tata. In every human being, there are elements in their lives which are like Isarusa de la Ela, where the arousal, the awakening, the inspiration comes from above. And our question is, what do we do when that happens, right? What's our job? And in the history of the Jewish people, we said this, Arizal says that this is called Leah, right? And then the Vilna Gaon explained that this is represented by the first Tkufa of Jewish history, the period of Nisim and Nevuah, which is we call the period of the first Beis HaMikdash, although there were a few hundred years before the building of the Beis HaMikdash are included in this period. But the first Beis HaMikdash was one where there was this bestowal of God's, you know, presence upon us through all kinds of Nisim on demand, through the Nevi'im and Nevuah of all sorts. And the information, those stories, that wisdom, that is Sarusa de la Ela, is contained in the 24 Sifrei Tanakh, right? That's called Leah, and that's the first Tkufa. Then we said, and we talked about how that's similar to Leah, right? Leah was given to Yaakov, the first one, all her children's names, right? Remember, represent how privileged she is, how fortunate she is, what is being bestowed upon her. Our question is, that's true. There are elements in a person's life, clearly a whole tekufa, 1,000 years of Jewish history. What do we do? What's our avoda? Then, of course, there's a transition to Rachel, the second Beis HaMikdash till today, right? That's called Isarusa de la Tata. The arousal comes from beneath, from us. We start the process. We bring the awareness of Hashem to this world through our hard work, through our sacrifice. And the shift goes from prophecy to, from prophets, from Nevi'im to Chachamim, who determine because of their own logic and analysis going by the 13 scientific methods that are permitted what the halacha must be, how to adapt the principles to the current situations. Chachamim replace Nevi'im. That's the Tkufa of Rachel. That's a Tkufa of this whole Gaulus period, which is the preferred Tkufa, obviously. And that's Yosef. Yosef is a Chacham, not a Navi. He's not listed among the Nevi'im. And Paro himself says, Ein Chacham v'Navon Kamocha, right? It says Chachma. And by the way, David Foreman has an amazing speech on how Yosef interpreted the dreams through Chachma and not Nevuah. Very, very interesting. How he knew how Paro's dreams meant had nothing to do with Nevuah. How did he figure it out? It's an ingenious lecture. It's probably online somewhere. And that's Rachel. And we said that Rachel is this Iker, but Rachel dies. And then when we return to Eretz Yisrael and Nevuah and Nisim is restored, which is Isarusa de la Ela, Leah. This time it'll be under completely different conditions, because this time we'll appreciate it, we will not squander it, we'll have worked for it, we'll know its value, we'll be thirsting for it, and when it's returned to us, the third Beis HaMikdash comes from Shemayim, whatever that means, Mashiach is chosen by heaven, it's bestowed again upon us, we are saved, so we are saved in the end, Hashem brings us back to Eretz Yisrael. That's after all our hard work. So we know it's easier to figure out what our avoda is, what our job is in the second tkufa, in the Isarusa de Latata, in the Rachel tkufa. Look at Yosef. You see what his work was. With Yehuda, it's a lot harder to figure it out. It's all very ambiguous. And it doesn't seem like he's, you know, you don't see the struggle. So what we're going to compare now is not the selling of Yosef. That's not today's conversation, but right after that, we have two juxtaposed parakim, Lamed Ches and Lamed Tes, and when you see the way they start, you see what the Chumash is trying to do. So let's just read the first few words of each parak. Lamed Ches says, Vayihi ba'eis ha'hi, and it was at this time after the selling of Yosef, V'yeired Yehuda me'eis echav, and Yehuda went down from his, from within his brothers, from the ace, we'll talk about what that means. He went down from his brothers. Okay? He went down, Rashi tells you, on the opening pasuk of the next perek, which is Lamed Tes 39, a play on words. The Yosef Hurad Mitzrayim. And Yosef was taken down to Mitzrayim. So Lamed Ches 38, after the selling of Yosef, says, Vayered Yehuda. Yehuda went down from his brothers. Right, and if you look there, he went to found a friend in Adulamik named Chira, and look what it says: Vayar Shem Yehuda Bas Ish Kanani. The pshat is he married a Kanani. Now some Chazal say it's not literal, but Kananim, I mean, that was so taboo, that was the ultimate taboo. So, but the Torah is trying to tell you something here. And then his disaster after disaster ensue. His wife dies, his children die, and then the incident with Tamar, which we'll talk about. Okay, which is a low point. So this Vayehiba Esahiva Yered Yehuda, Yehuda went down versus Lamed Tes 39, Vayosef Hurad Mitzrayim, and Yosef was brought down to Mitzrayim, is juxtaposing, showing you two different patterns or paths that both will now take in their rise to greatness, and they're very different. Both of them are challenged by a woman. Both women are L'shem Shemayim. If you turn to Rashi, on the beginning of Perek Lamed Tes, you see that it says, V'Yosef Hurad. Yosef was taken down. Okay, now Rashi says, after a couple of words, Kedei Lismoch Yeridaso Shel Yehuda Lemechiraso Shel Yosef. The Torah wants to put Yehuda's going down next to the selling of Yosef. Okay, to tell you, this is going back now to the previous Perek. Now, why does it talk about Vayered Yehuda, and it's right after the selling of Yosef? Lomar lecha, to tell you, Shebishvilo horiduhu migedulaso. That because of him and his advice regarding the selling of Yosef, they demoted him from his position. Don't forget, Reuven had been demoted because of the Bilhah incident. Shimon and Levi were demoted because of their impulsivity with the Shechem incident. So Yehuda is now the functioning leader of the children. They demoted him because after he was the one that gave advice about selling Yosef and they saw how miserable their father was and they regretted their decision, they went back to him and said, this was not leadership. What was this? This was, you know, this was a bad idea. And they demoted him. So he was in a low state and he therefore began to fall, so to speak, in many ways. And he left his brothers, he left his family. He went somewhere else. He found a Kanani woman. Things are unraveling. It's a low point for Yehuda. However, keep going. To tell you, and then here comes the story of Yosef, Ode. Why are these being juxtaposed? Kedei lismoch mase ishto shel Potifar lemase Tamar. The Torah also wants to juxtapose the incident with the wife of Potifar with the incident of Tamar, because that's these two women, and their plans were the cause of both the downfall, but then the rise of both Yosef and Yehuda. So let's compare and contrast them. Lamar lecha, to teach you. Mazu l'shem shemayim, afzu l'shem shemayim. They were both l'shem shemayim. Sheratza, that she saw, astrology, she saw that she would establish children from him. We're talking about the wife of Potiphar, and she doesn't know if it would be from her or from her children. So both of them, Rashi says, had good intentions. Okay. What's the difference between Eshes Potiphar then and Tamar? Both in the end, okay, were very much part of, as we said, the setting the stage for what, for later, the greatness that those two players, Yosef and Yehuda, would achieve. But what is the great difference, the ultimate difference between Eshes Potiphar and Tamar? Tamar becomes a mother of Mashiach. Eshes Potiphar, we never hear about again. She's not relevant. What's the big difference? This is huge. The difference in people is not having a dream, having an ambition. The difference in people is not devoting all your kochos to your vision, to what you want to achieve. The difference in people is how you react to the frustration of your desires. When everything seems to end in disaster, how do you react? If you're L'shem Shamayim, the reaction is Tamar's, which is she's Mavatel herself. She did it L'shem Shamayim. She is not going to take that pure, you know, motivation, and because it didn't work out the way she hoped to, go and destroy someone else. It's Hashem's department. Eshes Potiphar, although she was L'shem Shamayim, there was an element in there, obviously, that wasn't. And therefore, when her ambitions were frustrated, she went and destroyed tried to destroy a completely innocent person. See the difference? It's not so much having a dream and having plans and setting your mind to them and trying to make sure they are accomplished and being sincere. It's my grandfather Schwab always used to say, we always have to take a step back on a regular basis and evaluate our L'shem Shamayim if it's still L'shem Shamayim. That's where the shift is. So and by the way, talking everything we've all spoken about here about the Isha, the drive and the passion and the force and the ambition and the yearning that wants to be fulfilled, right, and the sense of satisfaction, that's the Isha quality. You see it in both of them. But beyond all that is the concept of being Mevatel. Now, Tamar and Yehuda are the examples of Bitul. Now, we said that our question starting up here is, what is the avoda of the people during Isarusa de Le'ela? What is Yehuda's avoda? What's the greatness of Yehuda here? What do we do in those periods of history and in the periods of our life where the inspiration is coming from above? Things are happening to us. Opportunities are being provided us. What is our job? And we begin to compare and contrast, as we said, Yehuda and Yosef and how the Torah speaks about them. Notice this. You do not see, just like Leah, in the way she named her children and the way Rachel did, in the story of Yehuda, the Torah does not report any inner struggle. We don't know what's going on in him at all. Okay, looking back in Perek Lamed Ches. Now, you know the story of Tamar, right? So Yehuda had two children, both first married Tamar. He died. It was his own fault. Then the second one, that's the mitzvah, Yibum married Tamar. He died. Also, again, his own fault. He had a third son. He did not want to give the third son to Tamar because he didn't know the secret, you know, the reason why they had died, that they refused to impregnate her because she was so beautiful. So he withheld his third son from her. She knew, she seems to know that this was wrong. And she had Ruach HaKodesh, it says, that she would build a family from and a future from Yehuda, from his children. So she went and she dressed herself up. This is very bizarre. And don't worry that it's bizarre, because whenever you're talking about the source of Mashiach, it's all very hidden and very unusual and very, you know, it comes to us in a way that's, you know, very, very, you know, clearly we see that things are going on beneath the surface. So she dresses herself up as a zona. Now look at the pasuk tesvav. Vayireha Yehuda. Yehuda sees her. Vayach sheveha lezona. He thinks she's a zona, doesn't know it's Tamar, his daughter-in-law. He kisses up Paneha because she covered her face. Okay, by the way, covering the faces was not the way to do things. He thought she was a zona because her face was covered. Okay, that is was not the minhag, the derech of the Jewish women. You don't cover your face. And so what happens? Vayet eleha. Now that word vayet, and he strayed towards her. Right? He just kind of veered off towards her. Off the way. El haderech, he veered off his path onto her path, and that's it. And he made an arrangement with her. That's all you hear about. Nothing else. Okay? Later, when, you could read the whole story yourself, later when it becomes obvious that Tamar is pregnant, and that she's, in a sense, attached to waiting for Yehuda's son, and therefore she's not available, and this must be a form of adultery, it's Yehuda is called upon to make a determination about what to do with his daughter-in-law. And although Rashi tells us he was demoted, and he was not in the best graces with his family, okay, and he was somewhere married to some Kanani, and he was friendly, you know, he wasn't even in the same, staying in the same vicinity as his brothers. Somehow, when it came to this, he had to make a decision, and his family was there. And now it would become obvious, as you all know, that he really, really kind of veered, that he strayed. So it's Yehuda doesn't know, realize that it's him, and he pronounces that she should be burned. By the way, Rashi brings down that she's a bas, she's a daughter of shame. She has the halacha, even among the goyim, of a Kohen's daughter. The burning here, it seems, according to many, it doesn't mean burned to death. It means branded. Like, you know, the A, the scarlet letter? Yeah, that there seems to be that the Gezar Din was not burning a person for this, but making a simon that this person's an adulteress. This was the way among the B'nai Noach. Okay? So when she, and of course, if you go by the pshat that she would be fully burned or this, they're both very, very bad, obviously. So what does she do? She doesn't say, are you crazy? She sends the items that he had left her as a kind of collateral, okay, to say, whoever these belong to, that's who I'm pregnant from. And then in Pasuk Chavav 26, it says, Vayaker Yehuda. Yehuda acknowledged, he recognized these are his items that he had left her as a kind of in lieu of payment. Vayomer, and he said two words, Tzadka Mimeni, which could be read two ways. She's more righteous than me, or she's righteous, it's from me. Okay? Now, he acknowledges the truth. You might ask, well, it would take a pretty low person not to acknowledge the truth, right? I mean, there's three lives at stake here. She has twins within her, which of course he probably wouldn't know. It was only 3 months. And Rashi says half of the first month, half of the second month, and 1 month in between. So it wasn't even like obvious. But still, to take, you know, to take a life. So where is the greatness here? So the fact that he acknowledges it, where is the greatness? Okay. So the greatness is in what Rashi tells us. So Rashi brings down Razal Darshu, our rabbis explained, that when he said Tzadka Mimeni, Baskol, Yatza Baskol, that's again, Isarusa de Leila, right? Mm-hmm. A heavenly voice goes out and says, Va'amra, no, Mimeni, from Hashem. Me'iti Yatzu Hadvarim, from me these things came out. Okay? Lefi Shahaisa Tznua Bebeis Chameha, Gezarti Sheyatzu Mimena Malachim, Mishevet Yehuda, Gezarti Lamed Malachim Bisrol. Because she was a tzanua in her father's house, I decreed that from her should come kings of Yisrael, and therefore this whole thing was from me. And she came up with a way to, you know, kind of make that happen. But Hashem is saying this all was from me. Now, this helps explain what Chazal say. Chazal say, although Yehuda was demoted by his brothers, he was not the kind of person that would do such a thing. So Chazal saying, you've heard this, a malach pushed him, right? A malach pushed him. What does this mean? An overwhelming force that he was incapable of resisting at that moment, which was out of character, drove him to do something that he would have never done. Chazal are telling us, Hashem says, mimeni, mi'iti yatsa hadavar. Remember when it says here in the beginning that Vayered Yehuda me'es echav, he went down, he was demoted from his brothers, and now it says, me'iti yatza, from me, me'es and me'iti is a similar word. This is all part of the concept of Isarusa de Le'ila. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu bestows upon us, he bestows upon us brachas, nisim, nevuah, he also bestows upon us opportunities for greatness. Sometimes greatness comes via weakness. Weakness, it's yirida, going down, letzorech, for the purpose of aliyah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put Yehuda in this position so that he would be forced to confront and achieve what would be his avoda. Gedal Yeshur explains this. It says, notice that Yehuda's name has within it all the names, all the letters of Hashem's name. Yud Ke, Vav Ke. Only with one extra Dalet. That Dalet is like David, which is Dalet and Dalet and a Vav in between. Dalet is Dal, like poverty stricken, with nothing. Nothing. David's first letter is Dalet. There he has nothing. His last letter is nothing. The Vav in the middle is the Vav HaChibur. Connection to Hashem without a connection to Hashem, zero. He's nothing on his own. David is totally in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, devoted to Hashem. Yehuda already has in his name all the letters of Hashem's name. The only thing extra is a Dalet. What is it trying to say? That the Avoda of Yehuda, like Leah before him, and this is the Avoda of the Yehudim, the Jewish people in the Tkufa of Isarusa de Le'ela and in our lives, that whatever Hashem throws upon the person, they must accept, take responsibility for, and use it to be moda, to give hoda'a to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and see it as an opportunity from Hashem for closeness, for greatness, for acknowledgement of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Yehuda has to say, tzadka, mimeni, it's my fault, although there's an element here where he was forced into something, something fell upon him that overwhelmed him that he had no resistance to. And then Hashem said, no, mi'iti, it was me. I put you down, all the way down, forced you into a situation so anathema to your personality and also so degrading and so humiliating for one reason, that despite the fact that it came from me, you will take achrayas for it and you'll say it was from me. I take achrayas. And go and accept the, in Yehuda's personal life, whatever difficulty or embarrassment would come from that, knowing that it's Hashem forced it. We were actors. We were, you know, we were responded to what Hashem threw upon us. And our avoda is one thing to be mevatel. Batel say, I take achrayas, to use this situation for greatness. When he took achrayas, which is, by the way, the midah of a king. Monarch, kingship, leadership is achrayas, responsibility for everybody else. In fact, the kings of Yehuda always, the seat of the throne was originally Beis Lechem Yehuda. That's where they came from, right? Beis Lechem. What is Beis Lechem? They provide for the people. Lechem. They are the source of provisions for the people. They take achrayas for the people. By the way, later on, Yehuda takes achrayas for Binyamin, and that pattern goes, weaves its way through history. It's astonishing how Yehuda and Binyamin always come to each other's aid at any critical juncture. Yehuda, in Vayigash, he takes achrayas. He takes achrayas for Binyamin, for the family. So, and of course, we said Malachim, kings, come from Yehuda. This is the avoda in Isarusa de Le'ela. When things come to us from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our job is one thing. It's already, Hashem's name's already there. It's imprinted. To be mevatel and accept it and give hoda and take achrayas for it, because it will lead a person to greatness. Okay, so Rav Gedal Yeshur says, this is the pattern of Yehuda, and he says that this hisbatlus gamur is the midah of Yehuda, total bittel. And look at Tamar. Tamar is also exactly the same thing. From this starts the line of Malchus Yehuda, total bittel. Now, this is Leah, right? Total bittel either. Remember we said about when she named her child Yehuda hapam ode es Hashem? That she was thrown into a situation herself. It almost like there, she wasn't, didn't have a choice. There was this or total destruction, right, with Esav. And she couldn't, she wanted so much things to work out according to how she wanted them, her perception of them. She wanted greater attachment to her husband. She tried, and it wasn't coming. We said that that's a symbol for the ultimate attachment to Torah is the other way, through for Rachel, right? Not what happens to you, but, and what Hashem bestows upon you, but your own efforts, which we'll talk about in a minute with Yosef. And the fourth child, she says, Hapam Odes Hashem. My grandfather says that Leah, the Chazal say, Leah is the first one to give Hoda'ah. But we say, that can't be. Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Adam, Nachal. So what real Hoda'ah is bowing, as we said, Modim, combined with toda, gratitude for having this opportunity given to us, accepting the yoke of this opportunity. In other words, being grateful and thanking Hashem for the situation that He has given us, although it's not what we personally would have wanted from our own perspective, but it was what was thrown upon us, so we accept it and give thanks for it. That's the midah of Yehuda, of Hoda'ah, of Leah. So her Hoda'ah was, she wanted a different situation with Yaakov, but she gave Hoda'ah for the situation she got and submitted to it, did her best with it, and appreciated it. That's ultimately the greatest koach. That's the avoda of Yehuda, of the tkufa of, and in our lives, as we said, of Isarusa de Le'ela. And this happens to us too. Things are thrown upon us. The things that look like they're bringing us down, if we're mevatel, accept them, take achrayus to do the best we can with them, be honest, then Hashem ultimately rewards our efforts, but saying, by the way, mi'iti yatsa, it was all for me anyway, and because of this, you're going to be seen as and take the path ultimately that leads to malchus, to real malchus, not just over like the kings of Yisrael over the people, but malchus is one of the midos, the ultimate midah of attachment to Hashem. The midah with which Hashem relates to this world is malchus. It's the concept of being totally connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's malchus, being an expression of the malchus of Hashem. That's the ultimate goal. Okay. Now Yosef's trajectory is completely different. Yosef is a Sarusa de la Tata, Rachel, and you're going to see Yosef's struggle is kind of like, you know, kind of in detail, you know, shown to us how he struggled, how difficult it was, and every single achievement that Yosef achieved in bringing Kiddush Hashem to the world came because of himself and his struggles. And Rav Gadal Yeshur says, Ma shenatznu lo mishelo natnu. Whatever Yosef achieved was from his own efforts. Okay, the greatness he achieved came from his hard work. Mishelo hainu mimasav. From him, that means from his deeds. V'shetzorech levaro kol masav ulezakot badin. It was up to Yosef to purify and clarify the perfection of each of his deeds, to have them each be played out, that you see Yosef's devotion and commitment to the truth, and each and every aspect of that Yosef had to actually define in his day-to-day life. And therefore, when he did it, it was known that he deserved everything he achieved, badin. Nothing was given to him for free, nothing. He achieved everything rightfully. It was him. And as Yehuda, the avoda is rak hoda'ah, only, you know, being mode. As we said, Hashem's name is already in him. Yosef does not have Hashem's name in him, but one letter of Hashem's name, the hey, is added to Yosef in return for all his efforts. As it says, the Gemara brings down, and we say this in Tehillim, Eidus b'Yehosef, right? Testimony through Yehosef with the hey, Hashem's name. Yosef was Mekadesh Shem Shemayim privately, unlike Yehuda, who was Mekadesh Shem Shemayim publicly. Again, that's Isarusa de Le'ela, Isarusa de la Tata. And only after Yosef stood firm in the Nisayon was the hay added, where Yehuda already had the names of Hashem from the beginning. See that? Now, look at what happens with Yosef. Yosef is the Avoda in the time of Chacham, in the time of Torah Shebal Peh, and when everything has to come from us. Hashem refers to him as Yehosef in Tehillim. David really. And when was that officially applied to Yosef in the Peshat? It's a good question. I don't know. I'm going to look into that. Huh? Yes. When that's true. I think it's Pei Aleph. I think it might be Pei. It's Pei Aleph. It's Pei Aleph. Yes, when he achieved Malchus. Now, listen to. Let's look in Perek Lamites. The Yosef Hurad Mitzrayma. See that hay? Maybe that hay is a symbol for the hay that's going to be added to Yosef's name. You see that? Yosef was taken down to Mitzrayim, and you know his story. Okay. Now look in Pasuk Nun. It says, Vayar Adonav, his master saw, right? What does it say? Ki Hashem ito, that Hashem was with him. Now you might think that this means what? That like Yehuda, Hashem was with him, right? What does Rashi say? No. Shem Shamayim Shogur Befiv, that he had the name of God always on the tips of his tongues. He said Baruch Hashem and Mirto Hashem, whatever he said, right? And if Hashem wants, and Hashem will answer. It doesn't mean, when it says Hashem Ito, from himself, Rashi says, he kept Hashem with him. And by the way, he had every reason to assume that he was done from the family of Yaakov. Just like Yishmael was kicked out, and Esau was kicked out, he was kicked out. His father's not looking for him. Nobody's coming to find him. There's no protest. Everybody seems to be in agreement, though all the brothers. He has every right to assume he's been banished. So he could abandon everything. He said, I'm not in Klal Yisrael anymore. I'm not one of them. They've determined that I'm in the category, the geder of Yishmael and Esau. I'm free from this whole thing. But that was not, he didn't care what they thought. He knew what was right. And he maintained an attachment, kept the name of Hashem on his lips at all times. So be very careful reading the pasuk. Rashi's telling you, what does it mean Hashem was with him? From himself. It's Isarusa de Latata. The awakening is coming from him. He's keeping it alive, okay? And because of this, B'chol asher hu osa Hashem matzliach b'yado, Hashem made him successful. Right? Hashem responded to that. Again, like Rachel. And he was Motzechein. Now, you know what starts happening. So what starts happening is Ashes Potiphar, and she would speak to him and try to seduce him, try constantly to get him to be with her, because she had, as we said in the beginning, she was L'Shem Shemayim. She, I'm sure, acted as if it was L'Shem Shemayim. As we said, we always have to make sure to reevaluate her L'Shem Shemayim if it's still L'Shem Shemayim. But look at Pasuk Ches. Gives us a whole long description of Yosef's inner struggles and how he's resisting this temptation. Vayimain, and he refused, right? And Vayomer, and he told her, he gave her all the reasons. He says, my master, your husband, trusts me. He trusts every single thing he owns into my hands. There's no one other more than me that's powerful in this house, that has responsibility and authority in this house. He's withheld nothing from me except you, his wife. And Eich Eseh Hara HaGadola Hazos, he's explaining to her philosophically. He's telling her, he's talking to her. This is wrong. How can I do such a terrible thing to someone who trusts me? This would be a betrayal. This would be ingratitude. All the ethics and the morals. And also V'chatasi L'Elokim, I would sin to God. By the way, there's Eishes Ish by the Goyim. Marriage is a marriage among the Goyim, and there is adultery by the Goyim. He would be sinning against Hashem. All the, right? So he says, and he explained to her, I can't do it on the level, on what's right and what's just and what's proper on any level. He's struggling with this, right? And he's bringing in rational explanations to bolster himself and why he can't. But one point it says, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayhi kayom hazeh vayavo habayisa lasos malachto. He came to the house, the estate, to do his work, and nobody was there besides him and her. And Chazal talk about this, that doing his work is a subtle reference to taking care of, business with that. This was playing on him for a long time. But Chazal then tell us what happened. He was close to sinning, very close to sinning. He sees his father's face, an image of his father, Yaakov, in the window. Right? And Yaakov says to him, and I didn't bring the actual quote, but Yaakov says to him the following, is a piece from my grandfather Sefer, which is so insightful, we've said it many times here. He says to him, Yosef, in the future, your name is going to be written on the ephod that the Kohen Gadol is going to wear. And your name will be a beine, between all the names of your brothers. Is it your will that your name will be erased from in between your brothers' names? Now wait. Shimon had sinned. Reuven had sinned. Shimon and Levi had sinned. No, Yaakov never said to them, your name is going to be erased from between your brothers. What is this threat here? And the secret is that Yaakov said to Yosef, Chazal tell us, the message Yosef got in his head is, and it's astonishing because as we said, he had every right to assume he's banished, right? that he's not part of the family. And now Yaakov's coming saying, wait, you're going to, he's kind of informing him, your name is still there among the family, but it's going to be erased now. Yaakov says to him, your name is going to be on the ephod. What is the ephod? What is the ephod? I'll tell you what it's not. It's not the choshen. The choshen is the breastplate, which is a separate beged. It's a completely separate beged, okay? The choshen is a breastplate with 12 stones, and the names of the Shvatim were written on them, and when there was an Urim and Tumim in the first place of Megdesh, a Sarusa de La'ela, when there was a name, a parchment with Hashem's name in a pocket behind it, the Kohen could consult it, and it would light up the letters and give answers to questions. Second base of Midrash, there was no Urim Tumim behind the Choshen. But this is, Yaakov has nothing, not talking about the Choshen. The Ephod. Now, on the Choshen, Yosef's stone was the Shoham, the onyx. The Kohen wore an Ephod, an apron, which had two epaulets. They were onyx, Yosef's stone. And on one was written six Shvatim, and on the other was written six Shvatim. So what Yosef is being told here is, you're not just one of the sons, okay? You have not been abandoned. You are going through this whole process because you are the Yesod. That's the word for Yosef. It's one of the spheres. Yesod, the basis. That's why we say Tzaddik is called Yosef HaTzaddik. That's his name, like Moshe Rabbeinu. Yosef HaTzaddik. Tzaddik, Yesod, is the foundation of the whole world, which we will develop this further. You are the Yesod. Upon you rests the future existence of all of Klal Yisrael. If you don't stand firm in this Nisayon and run away and do not capitulate and do not fall, what will happen is there'll be no Klal Yisrael. You can't allow yourself to sin at all. All of Klal Yisrael will exist only because of you, and it doesn't just mean physically, now we mean spiritually. Wait, Yehuda sinned. I mean, he gave in, and that didn't destroy the rest of Klal Yisrael. Why would Yosef giving in at this point destroy the rest of Klal Yisrael forever and there'd be no Klal Yisrael? That's really what Yaakov was saying. Right, because he's the one who taught us how to live in goals. We're taking this further. Rav Huttner says, beautiful, Rav Huttner frames this so succinctly, beautifully. Avraham introduced the possibility of ideologically becoming connected to the MS, becoming, let's call it, a Jew, coming to the truth, okay? Yitzchak introduces the koach, the power. It is a reality now in the world that you can be born into this truth. Now, that means like this. By Avram starts the notion of a religion, an ideology. By Yitzchak starts the notion of a nation, that it's a family, you're born into an ideology, where that's why Klal Yisrael are both a religion and a nation, which we're the only people like that. We are not just a nation that speaks the same language, where even if we speak different languages and live all in different places, we are still a religion. The Arabs, for example, are a religion. They're certainly not a single nation. Same with the Christians. We are both. That's Avram and Yitzchak. Now, Yaakov introduces the new reality that what is called mitaso shlema, that all your children are Klal Yisrael, even if they sin. That's not like Yishmael and Esav, right? Starting from Yaakov is it's a religion, it's a nation, and if you're part of the nation, you're always part of the nation. There's no such thing as opting out. Even if you sin, you're part of the nation. Klal Yisrael cannot not be both a nation and a religion anymore. But that's not enough to guarantee that Klal Yisrael will survive. It's not enough. Because although Yisrael, afilu shechata Yisrael, who even though a Jew sins, they will still be called a Jew, it is possible for Klal Yisrael, for these Jews, to assimilate, intermarry into oblivion. You need one more koach to establish forever that Klal Yisrael will not intermarry and not ultimately assimilate. That's Yosef. Yosef is seen by Chazal as the extension of the koach of Yaakov. That's why Chazal say back in Vayetze that as soon as Yosef was born, the Bechor of Rachel, then Yaakov knew he was safe to leave Lavan and go back to his father's house and on the way encounter Esav because he had Yosef, this koach, he would be able to survive the onslaught of Esav, which is this long, huge galus, this Rachel Tkufa. Why? So Chazal, I'll give an example. Yaakov is the flame base, Yaakov la'esh. Esav is the kash, the pile of straw. How does the esh burn the kash? a spark flies out from the fire, and that's all you need, and all the straw burns up. So that means that Yosef is that spark. Yosef is the extension of the koach of Yaakov, no question about it. Therefore, Yaakov is coming to him and saying, Klal Yisrael, through you, Yosef, by the way, he's also considered, as you know, one of the Avos, right? He's one of the Ushpizin, he's one of the Shiva Roim, his children get a Nachala, there's a lot. He's definitely among the Avos, he's like a quasi one of the Avos. Yaakov is saying to him, you are the guarantee for Klal Yisrael to survive. You're down in Gullis here to prepare the way for Klal Yisrael to know how to survive in Gullis. You're here to establish what the avoda is in Isarusa during the time period of Latata, of down here. We said in the first Tkufa, when Hashem throws everything on us, we have to accept and give Hoda'a. In the second Tkufa, as we said, everything is what we achieve on our own because we hold on to it, we insist on it, we don't let it go. Now what happens? Now the difference between Yehuda and Yosef is the following. Yehuda sins and does tshuva. Because when things are thrown on you, they overwhelm you and you react to them. But Yosef takes all the matters into his own hands. He's the source. He's the cause. So he cannot be overwhelmed by outside forces. He can never be overwhelmed by outside forces. He controls everything. The difference in Yehuda and Yosef is Yehuda does tshuva because he's overwhelmed and he falls and makes a mistake, right? Yosef never sins at all. He's called Tzadik Mi'ikaro. He doesn't sin. Now he got very close to it. But what we mean here is, in the end, he doesn't sin and he doesn't have to do tshuva. He doesn't sin. He stays firm, straight through the Nisayon, and that's the guarantee and the koach that Klal Yisrael depends on and only exists because of. Because think about it. In this long gullus we're in, okay, most of us, most of the time, believe it or not, because of the gullus, although it's Isarusa Dele Tata, everything must come from us, we really respond to it like Yehuda, like when Yehuda went down into his own gullus, right? We get overwhelmed, we get weak, things are thrown upon us of all sorts from the situation, and we end up we sin and we do tshuva. But what if everybody was sinning and doing tshuva? What would happen is, how do you do tshuva? How do you do tshuva when there's no role model to aspire to? There's no one to set the example. You must have in Gullus the figure of Yosef, which is the one who never succumbs at all, who stays strong the entire time, who always keeps his head, always is the inspiration for everyone around them, never ever weakens and gives in, because if everyone weakens and gives in, there's no one to guide. There's no one to hold down the fort. Haraya, the proof, right? We always talk about this particular personality because I was very, very moved by the stories of this Klosenberger Rebbe. And this is an example of the Yosef that has the koach to pull everybody else who fell back into the fold. So this Klosenberger Rebbe, you got to see this two-volume book, the War Years and the Rebuilding Years. It's astonishing. I told you this, right? His family was destroyed, 11 kids and his wife. He was pulled out of, his group was pulled from one of the concentration camps to clean up the rubble after they bombed the Warsaw Ghetto. You can imagine what it looked like, all the corpses burnt in the shul and all the corpses on the street. You can imagine what it looked like. Now, he weighed like 80 pounds. He was covered in lice. He had typhus. He was a concentration camp victim. He had lost everything. And as he's cleaning up the Warsaw Ghetto, he's crying. And why would somebody cry? There's a few good reasons to cry. But his Talmidim, of course, wanted to hear. People who knew him, the people that ultimately told their stories. What's he crying about? So they went to hear. And what is he muttering? Lama yomru hagoyim aye na Eloheihem. Why should the goyim have the opportunity to say, ha, where is their God? He was crying on behalf of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They found him on Simchas Torah with a few tattered pages of a Tehillim walking around a stool in the barracks trying to do hakafas. He never lost his sense of keeping the inspiration alive. That's why it was him who 48 hours after liberation had a kosher kitchen going because his head was together. He went into the kitchen and he said, you know what, take this pot, let the water boil over it so it's kosher, and then when you cook the soup, just don't put any horse meat or any meat into this pot. Let this pot be just vegetables and grain. He had a school going a school going within a few days of liberation. He gathered up anyone he could find who still knew a little Torah, gathered all the children, and set up a room and had started teaching Torah right there in the camps before the DP camps. He already had Torah being taught. He kept his head together the entire time. Now, if there's no one like that to bring everyone else back, no one could come back. The first Yom Kippur after the liberation, everyone was like walking dead, right? They tried to put together some type of Yom Kippur davening. And there was a chazan. They didn't have a machzor. They didn't have all the pages. They had a little bit. So the chazan got up to the shliach tzibur to start the ashamnus. He walked up and he closed the machzor. He says, no, we don't have to say any ashamnus. We don't have to do tshuva. We are cleansed. Nobody here has anything that they have to ask for forgiveness. He said, there's only one sin we're guilty of now, and that is we all want to die. We don't want to go forward. That we have to do tshuva on. Everyone. So this is a leader. He ultimately founded 30 institutions, Kiryat Sanz, Laniato Hospital, tons. He brought all the refugees back to him. He had tons. Not, he wasn't the only one. My father used to go hear him lecture when we lived in Elizabeth in Union City. I remember he used to come back like out of his mind from the Klosenberger Rebbe. I was a little kid. I had no idea. And then he moved to Eretz Yisrael. But the point is, that's the Yosef. You must have someone who always stays strong, that everyone else can come back, has something to lead, someone to pull them back, follow the leader that they can follow. That's what Yaakov's saying to Yosef. If you cave, there'll be no Klal Yisrael. You have to stay strong. So Yosef is tzaddik mi'ikaro, from his essence, ikar, that's the ikar. He's tzaddik yisod olam, and he is the one that, in Kabbalistic terms, there are two terms for these forces. One is Yehuda, which is there's a term that means turning the bad into good, taking the bad as it's thrown upon us and making good out of it. And then there's another koch, which is rejecting the bad to begin with. Right? Vayimain. That's the word, vayimain. Declining, refusing. So Yosef represents that koach, that's the extension of Yaakov. And for all his efforts, he gets the hay added to his name. And it's all beseser, secretly. And guess what? Unlike Isarusa de la'ela, where do you make a public Kiddush Hashem, and then publicly you become a melech, because everything is from a Kaddish Baruch Hu and coming from Hashem, by Isarusa de la'tata, his greatness, his Kiddush Hashem was private. And what did he get for it? Thrown into jail. Right? Now, this was the beginning of his rise, but you know how many years it took when he sat in that jail? 12 years. Supposed to be 10, but it was 2 more. And you know why it was 10? Because as a tikkun, for the fact that he spoke Lashon Hara on his 10 brothers, that back in the day, he wasn't using his koach correctly to be the yesod of his brothers, the support, but he was competing with his brothers. And that had to be fixed before he could go on to take achrayas and be a melech. A melech takes achrayas. And then he took achrayas for all of Klal Yisrael. Physically, he took care of them, plus the rest of the world. And in Ruchnius, and by the way, that's why in his dreams, there were two dreams. The first one, the stalks of wheat bow to him, and says there in the Pasuk, by Yisnu, they hated him. Because that shows that in terms of physical, material power, he will be greater than them. And that led to a hatred in their reaction. But the second dream, where the sun and the moon and the stars were bowing to him, that shows that he would dominate them in Ruchnius. He would be the Ruchnius force that everybody would ultimately recognize and bow to as the source that kept us strong, the anchor. And that dream, it doesn't say they hate him. It says, Vayiknu, they were jealous. Vayikanu, they had kinna, the right kind of kinna for him. That was a positive. And it's read, of course, it led to the selling. But in a higher level, they understood that. And they recognized when you're jealous of something, you want it, you know. It's something to aspire to. That's the second dream. And when he realized that all of his malchus was only so that he could sustain them and not so that he could lord it over them, that's when that recognition came to him, that's part of the 10 years in prison, he began his path to malchus. He himself had to go through a transformation of recognizing his greatness was on behalf of Klal Yisrael, not on behalf of himself, you know, independent of Klai Yisrael. So the difference between Yehuda and Yosef, or Isarusa de la Eilin, Isarusa de la Tata, is one demands the avoda of Hoda'a, accepting, thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the name of Hashem is already written in it, and it takes only the Dalid to be Mevatel, to be like a Dal, like a pauper, you know, it's not about me. The avoda of Isarusa de la Eila, which is Yosef, is everything is the person's commitment, conviction, determination, efforts on every level. He resisted her intellectually by his whole speech. It's not right. It's not ethical. It's ungrateful. It's a betrayal. Emotionally, he's rejecting her. And physically, he runs away. It's the person musters up all their kochos to make a Kiddush Hashem. And believe it or not, in the end, it's only, and no one even sees it. It's all under the surface. And he gets the name, the hay of Hashem's name, right? He gets the hay of Hashem's name, Yehosef, but that hay of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, obviously, that is the, and maybe we'll talk about that more, that represents, that hay we brought upon ourselves. We earned that hay, and that is the koach that ultimately ensures, A, the survival of Klal Yisrael, and eventually, as we said, the restoration of Yehuda, of the Isarusa de la Eila, of the bestowal from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but this time, the second time around, right, when we get it back, when you, by the way, Yosef, he ultimately, what does he do to Yehuda in the Vayigash? He acquiesces to Yehuda. He backs off from Yehuda. He lets Yehuda take the reins at that point. And that's the same thing as Klal Yisrael going back to Eretz Yisrael in the end, where Rachel's Mevake gives the reins back to Leah as we come back. It's again, it's Yerusha de Le'ela, it's Leah's children, it's Malchus. And then we appreciate it. We don't squander it. We know we've worked for it. We are working through this whole Tekufa of Rachel, the whole Avodah of Yosef, is to get to a point where the Yerusha de Le'ela returns, right? But it returns because we earned it, not because Hashem threw it upon us. By the way, something very interesting. After this whole story with where Yosef eventually gives in to Yehuda because he sees Yehuda's transformation, you notice something. My grandfather points this out. He was, after that, after the famine ended, he was actually demoted. He was no longer Mishnah Lamelech. In other words, his role of king was over. Mission accomplished. How do we know? Because when it came time to bury Yaakov, he says he had to go to the base of Paro and ask permission from Paro's servants if he could speak to Paro. He was Paro's, like a son to Paro. He was, everything changed over time. Seems to be that when Yehuda takes over again, that's really Yosef's mission to pave the way for the proper leadership, which ultimately is in Eretz Yisrael with the Madre, you know, with the Bechina of Yehud and all that represents. Okay. All right, everybody. Hanukkah next week in Mirz Hashem. Musaf, that's right. That's right.